What interior act during mental prayer will involve you deeply, make you commit yourself, and make you surrender your past as well as your future to God? What act will make you put your life on the line? One word describes this act: self-offering. Yes, mental prayer is first of all the offering of ourselves to God. Perhaps you will ask me, why don't you speak instead of loving? Actually, loving and offering oneself are not separable. Self-offering is to love, what fruit is to the tree. The patient, secret labor of the tree during the long winter prepares the delectable fruit that the June sun ripens on the branch. The same is true of self-offering, the fruit of love patiently developed during many periods of prayer. One day during mental prayer, it falls off of its own weight into God's hand, as He reaches out to pick it. Saint Paul has a wonderfully powerful sentence to invite us to this self-offering. I would like you to know it by heart, to repeat it slowly and with great attention at the beginning of your mental prayer, and now, brothers, I beg you through the mercy of God to offer your bodies as a living sacrifice holy and acceptable to God, your spiritual worship. RM 12:9. Is there a better definition of mental prayer? 56. Second letter to Jean-Pierre. I was not expecting the strange conclusion you drew from my last letter. If mental prayer consists essentially in offering oneself, I don't see why you ask me to practice mental prayer every day. Once this offering has been made, in truth and totally, with full knowledge and consent, what's the use of renewing it daily? What's done is done. In reading your letter, I was reminded of what a husband told his young wife, who had just chided him for never expressing his love. Come now, you wouldn't want to make me look ridiculous by repeating to you every day what I told you once and for all. What's done is done. Your assertion is less logical than it appears to be. A person does not give himself like an inanimate object. When you have given your watch or your pen, that's it. There's no use thinking about it anymore. But a living person is given only to the degree that he maintains and perseveres in the act of self-giving. As soon as he departs from this basic attitude of mind, he is no longer given. It's true of human love, and it's true with God. It is therefore of utmost importance to acquire the habitual attitude of self-offering to God. Once it has been acquired, you must defend and nurture it, or it will soon lose its vigor and its truth. Now, the privileged means of acquiring, defending, and nurturing this attitude is mental prayer. Only mental prayer helps us to advance toward the permanent gift of self to God. Only mental prayer renews and energizes its dynamism. Mental prayer is the most vital time of a life offered to God. 57. Third letter to Jean-Pierre. To practice mental prayer is to offer oneself to the Lord, as I was telling you in my two last letters. But what is this impetus that impels the Christian to offer himself to his God? There are several constituent elements, but one of them takes precedence over all the rest, and gives self-offering its hallmark, gratitude. When you come before God, and think about Him, you cannot help being impressed by His generosity. He has heaped His gifts upon you, and He never stops. If your heart is in the right place, your gratitude wells up spontaneously to your God. In response to His love that gives, your love acknowledges Him and gives thanks. And if you meditate in greater depth, you soon understand what distinguishes God from other benefactors. They offer you gifts that increase your possessions. God, for His part, never stops giving you a more fundamental gift, your existence. You become aware that if He interrupted His action, you would immediately sink back into nothingness. And so, gratitude thrills in you once more. But this time, it is more than an intense and impassioned sentiment. It is like a return of your whole being toward God. Suddenly, the river flows back towards its source. Your meditation has still greater things to discover. God does not only give you your being, your natural life. He also gives you your supernatural life, The one whose seed he implanted anew through baptism, and which he never stops cultivating through his sacraments. When you really become aware of this prodigious gift, God communicating his own life to you, you rush, swept along by grace, toward him in gratitude and joyfully offer yourself to his tender paternal embrace. So you see that gratitude has welled up at every stage of your meditation. It is the underlying dynamism that inspires the man of prayer to offer himself to God. Now, let us call it by its Christian name, thanksgiving. In response to God's love, which is grace, man's love wells up in thanksgiving. Grace and thanksgiving are the two poles of the dialogue of love between God and man. Thanksgiving is certainly much more than a matter of words and feelings. It is the joyous, loving gift of self, irrevocable and without reservation. 58. Fourth letter to Jean-Pierre. Have I succeeded in making you realize that thanksgiving, the soul of mental prayer, is something very different from a superficial sentiment? It is the surging up of our innermost self which, having come forth from God, returns to God. It is the ebb and flow of love. God's love is poured out on his child, and a filial love leaps back toward the Father. One and the same love comes forth from God and returns to him, a paternal love at the start, and a filial love when it returns. This exchange of love between God and man reflects, and is part of, a much loftier reality, the love between the Father and the Son within the Trinity. From all eternity, the Father, in a surge of divine generosity, has communicated the fullness of his being, without reservation or intermittence, to his beloved Son. From all eternity, the Son has received the Father's gift, and offered himself to him in a joyous leap of thanksgiving. This love that gives and this love that renders thanks are, as it were, two powerful waves that impetuously rush toward one another, meet, meld into one, and leap up together from their bed in an immense geyser, Richard of Saint Victor. The Son of God has come into our midst to celebrate his eternal thanksgiving within a human nature. In the heart of the man Jesus, the unimaginable Trinitarian mystery is being lived. The Son surrenders himself totally to the Father who is giving himself to him. Father, I thank you. John 11:41, etc. This little prayer, which rises so often from Jesus' lips, is very revealing of his innermost life, of his eternal religion, incarnated in his humanity. The thanksgiving of Jesus was manifested in all its plenitude and power at the Passion and the Resurrection. Triumphing over suffering and death, it carried him up in a conquering flight to the right hand of the Father. Even so, Christ has never stopped celebrating here on earth the great liturgy of thanksgiving. Day after day, hour after hour, from the rising to the setting sun, the Mass has perpetuated over the centuries the act by which Jesus offered himself in thanksgiving to the Father, in his own name and in the name of the human race. But Christ's love aspires to still greater things. To give thanks for and among all men is not enough for him. He wants millions of hearts and millions of voices. He takes possession of these hearts through Eucharistic communion. He implants in them his own eternal thanksgiving to germinate and develop, so that it may be celebrated not only in church, but may also be lived in all times and places by all who open their hearts and souls to it. As a fermental prayer, it is that privileged hour when all occupations come to a halt, and the Christian devotes himself unreservedly to Christ's own thanksgiving. Assembled in Christ who has taken possession of him, the Christian is united to all his brothers and sisters, in heaven and on earth. Their spiritual riches belong to him, and his belong to them. Together with them, he accepts responsibility for all those who do not yet know their heavenly Father. It is only in the Church, the gathering of the Lord's children assembled in prayer, that we can encounter God and pray to him. There, everyone prays in the name of all, and all pray in the name of each. 59. Shoulder to shoulder, during mental prayer, We have available to us much more than our own individual resources. We have the inexhaustible love and prayers of all the members of God's family. 60. The organist's little daughter, at the hour of prayer, we must unite not only with the church of this earth, but also with the church of heaven, with the great heavenly liturgy of the angels and saints. 61. Jacob's ladder, and at the center of the great assembly of all of God's children, behold Mary, our mother, who melds our prayer into her prayer. 62 and 63. The presence of Mary, to rally the church to prayer, does not mean that we are turning away from the multitudes who don't know the Lord, or who reject Him. How could we glimpse the splendor, the sovereignty and the fatherhood of God without feeling the need to make them known to others? 64. Atheism and mental prayer. The man of prayer, by his silent presence, is already doing the Lord's work, which is to gather into one all the dispersed children of God. Jn 11:52. 65. Black Mimouna. In addition, he intercedes for the world, so that it may be preserved from the punishments that men's innumerable sins call down loudly upon it. 66. In the breach, to intercede is much more than simply to plead the cause of one's brothers. It is to be eager to inaugurate God's reign, and to allow His all-powerful love to pass freely through oneself. 67. With outstretched arms, through prayer, man collaborates in God's work, not only within himself but also in the entire world. 68. To pray is to cooperate with God. 59. Shoulder to shoulder. If we want to find God, we must go to the place where He is waiting for us. For He has chosen certain meeting places. For the Hebrews, during their long sojourn in the desert, it was the tent of meeting. After their settlement in Canaan, it was Jerusalem, and within Jerusalem, the temple. Sacrifices were not to be offered anywhere else. The temple was the house of God, also called the house of prayer by the prophets. The prayers that each individual offered in his home or in the synagogue were directed toward the temple. Thus, the prophet Daniel always kept open the window of his upper room that faced towards the holy city. But the temple was only an image, an anticipation of the definitive house of God that is the church, the great gathering of all the faithful of earth and heaven. The church is indeed the holy temple, as Saint Paul says, the spiritual dwelling, the new house of prayer. Whenever we want to pray, we must go to the house of God, we must enter into the church. By this, I mean that we must become aware once more of belonging to the church. Any one of us who isolates himself will never encounter God, because it is within the church, the mystical body of His Son, that He awaits us. Outside the church there is no salvation, because outside of Christ, outside God's family, outside the house of God, we have no way of finding God. 3. I fear that you are experiencing the temptation of spiritual individualism. This may be the explanation for your bouts with discouragement. I invite you to pray within the church, spiritually united to all your brothers and sisters. Pray in the midst of them, join your voice to the prayers of the priests and the faithful, of the men of yesterday, today, and tomorrow. Pray also in their name. Consider yourself deputed to pray. Lend your voice, your soul, to the entire community which wants to address itself to the Father through you. Did not Christ invite us to say, "Our Father, give us"? The Christian should not pray only in his own name, or petition only for himself. And that is not all. You must also pray through all your brothers and sisters. Know that in the great fraternal communion they are at your service. Claude has expressed it in his inimitable way in Un Poet Regard Lacroix, a poet looks at the cross. Listen to what he has to say. We have much more than our own faculties to love, understand and serve God. We have everything available to us all at once, from the Blessed Virgin Mary at the summit of the heavens, to the miserable African leper who, holding a bell in his hand, exhales the responses of the Mass through his half-rotted lips.